Hello, welcome to the In Conversation podcast series for the Association for Child and Adolescent Mental Health, or ACAM for short. I'm Jo Carlo, a freelance journalist with a specialism in psychology. Today I'm interviewing Assistant Professor Dr. Sandra Thyssen of the Department of Psychology, Education and Child Studies at Erasmus University, Rotterdam. Sandra is a co-author on the paper The Longitudinal Association Between Externalizing Behavior and Frontoamygdala Resting State Functional Connectivity in Late Adolescence and Young Adulthood, published in the Journal of Child Psychology and Psychiatry, the JCPP, in September 2020. If you're a fan of our In Conversation series, please subscribe on iTunes or your preferred streaming platform. Let us know how we did with the rating or review, and do share with friends and colleagues. Sandra, thank you for joining me. Can you start with an introduction of who you are and what you do?
Of course. First of all, thank you, Jo, for inviting me to discuss our paper on the ACAM podcast. My name is Sandra Thijs. I'm an assistant professor of clinical child and family studies at the Erasmus University of Rotterdam. But coming next month, I'll join the Radboud University of Nijmegen. And I'm a neuroscientist interested in neurobiology of externalizing behavior, such as aggression, substance abuse, but also dishonest behavior. And in my research, I study brain structure and function underlying mostly normative variation in externalizing behavior. And more recently, I've also become interested in examining the role that the early family environment plays in determining the brain correlates of externalizing behaviors, but also internalizing behaviors, such as depression and anxiety.
So how did you come to be interested in child and adolescent mental health?
That's a good question. Thank you. I experienced my own adolescence as a tumultuous period with lots of extreme emotions. I was insecure about the way I looked, the way I behaved. And I don't think my experience differs a great deal from the experience of others, but I think it did at that time spark my interest for mental health. I wondered, why do I feel the way I do, and why do others appear more stable? And it was those questions that made me decide to study psychology. And during my studies, I got enthused for child and adolescent development because the childhood and adolescent periods are so important for shaping how we function as adults. And I believe that if we can improve child and adolescent well-being, we're also helping future adults to feel happier and healthier, and thereby indirectly impact also our future society.
As I mentioned in the intro, we're going to focus on your paper published in the JCPP. But before we go into details, can you give a brief overview of how the frontoamygdala brain circuitry functions and also its role in emotional regulation?
Yeah, sure. So the frontoamygdala circuitry consists of the amygdala on the one hand and regions of the prefrontal cortex on the other hand. The amygdala is a subcortical brain structure that was originally thought to play a large role in negative emotions like fear and anger. But more recently, the amygdala has been linked also to positive emotions and is now suggested to play a role more so in salience detection and emotional learning. So in a matter of speaking, if something of importance happens, your amygdala sort of starts shouting and urges you to pay attention. And the prefrontal cortex, on the other hand, is a higher order brain region, and some of its subparts, in particular structures like the orbital frontal cortex and the anterior cingulate cortex, are thought to regulate or calm this initial emotional response by the amygdala. Mm-hmm. So by regulating the amygdala's response, the prefrontal cortex is involved in emotion regulation. And this process is measured by examining frontal amygdala functional connectivity, which is the correlation between the activity in the amygdala and the activity in the prefrontal structures like the anterior cingulate cortex and the orbital frontal cortex, which are the structures we examined in our study.
Great, thank you. And your paper focused on the association between adolescent and young adult externalizing behavior, such as aggression and rule breaking, and frontoamygdala functional connectivity when the brain is at rest. Why was it important to look at the brain at rest, and what was the aim of the study?
That's a great question. Most studies examining the neural correlates of externalizing behavior have used task-based fMRI. So in such studies, participants lie in the scanner and perform a specific task. For example, they could be asked to view emotional faces or emotional scenes, or they're asked to solve moral puzzles. And these studies teach us a lot about how individuals who show high levels of externalizing behavior respond to these specific circumstances. And what studies about the brain in rest add to this knowledge is that they provide insights on how the brains of these individuals function in the absence of stimulation or when they are at rest.
Uh-huh.
And this activation in rest is important because although at rest, the brain is not idle. Resting state activity is assumed to take up about 20% of the body's energy, despite the brain being only 2% of the body's mass. And the way the brain behaves in the absence of stimulation may actually determine how it responds when stimulation does occur. So therefore, the aim of our study was to examine the relationship between adolescent self-reported externalizing behavior and amygdala anterior cingulate cortex and amygdala orbitofrontal cortex functional connectivity in the brain at rest. And we also wanted to examine how this relationship might change over adolescence and young adulthood.
And how did you go about this? What was the methodology used?
This study was conducted at the University of Minnesota. I was a visiting scholar there from 2017 to 2019. And the data were actually drawn from a larger study of adolescent brain and behavioral development directed by Monica Luciana's laboratory. And our analyses were conducted in a sample of over 100 adolescents and young adults from the general population. And participants were 11 to 25 at the start of our study and were seen up to four times over two-year intervals. And at all four visits, we measured externalizing behavior using the Achenbach Youth and Adult Self-Report Questionnaires. These questionnaires ask individuals to report on the extent to which they engage in rule-breaking behaviors as well as aggression. And we examined frontoamygdala functional connectivity using resting state functional MRI. So as I explained before, this means that we measured participants' brain activation in the absence of a task. Participants were instructed to lay in the scanner with their eyes closed, but to resist falling asleep. And using these resting state scans, we examined the degree of co-activation between the amygdala on the one hand and two regions of the prefrontal cortex on the other hand, namely the anterior cingulate cortex and the orbitofrontal cortex. So what we measured was the extent to which increases in activation in the of the amygdala are related to increases in activation of the anterior cingulate or orbitofrontal cortex and vice versa. Okay, so we examined if differences in externalizing behavior between individuals, as well as differences within individuals over time, were related to amygdala anterior cingulate cortex functional connectivity and amygdala orbitofrontal cortex functional connectivity. And we also examined whether this relationship depended on age.
And what can you say about the findings?
We found that individuals who show higher levels of externalizing behavior have a higher degree of functional connectivity between the amygdala and the anterior cingulate cortex and orbitofrontal cortex. And this association was independent of age, which means that between adolescence and young adulthood, we found a higher degree of functional connectivity in those who were high externalizers and lower degrees of functional connectivity in those who were low externalizers. And this difference in functional connectivity between the high and low externalizers did not change over the course of development.
So can I check, in layman's terms, do your findings suggest that adolescents with higher externalizing behaviors are in a state of hypervigilance?
I think it's hard to interpret exactly what this higher degree of functional connectivity between the amygdala and the anterior cingulate cortex and orbitofrontal cortex means. Hypervigilance as a psychological state is more typically associated with states of anxiety. Mm-hmm. Because we scanned our participants while they were at rest, we cannot make use of stimulus material or participant behavior to interpret the meaning of our findings as is somewhat more possible in task-based fMRI. But our results do suggest that the amygdala and anterior cingulate cortex and orbitofrontal cortex show a strong connection, and that when the amygdala becomes activated, so does the anterior cingulate cortex and the orbitofrontal cortex and vice versa. And I think the vice versa part is important because it could be that prefrontal areas are actually calling upon the amygdala to alert itself as opposed to a more bottom-up sequence of activation. So because these regions seem more attuned, even in the absence of emotional stimuli, this could suggest that this frontal amygdala circuit is in a less activated state in those with lower levels of externalizing behavior. But again, we do not know exactly what this lower degree of connectivity in the absence of stimulation or reaction means. And we would need to relate this measure of connectivity to a measure of vigilance or to test it in the context of a task that demands actual behavior in order to make more substantiated claims about the meaning of this functional connectivity effect.
Sandra, in your study, no association was found between externalizing behavior and age, Was that surprising, and how do you account for that?
Yeah, that was surprising. Prior literature, but maybe even more so, our general conception of adolescence suggests that externalizing behaviors, and then especially rule-breaking behaviors, peak during adolescence. The adolescent period is characterized, of course, by important challenges such as changing relationship with parents, exploration of new roles, the experience of intimate partnerships. And it seems unsurprising that for some individuals, more than for others, these challenges are met with acting out behaviors. But our sample did not support this prediction, perhaps because of the relatively high functioning nature of our sample. Our study was conducted in a sample from the general population, and while it did include several participants showing clinical levels of externalizing behaviors, most individuals showed low or average levels of externalizing problems. So while we did expect externalizing behaviors to increase over age, at least over adolescence, more recent literature on the development of externalizing behavior is more mixed, with some studies showing increases over adolescence, while others show stable patterns of externalizing behavior. And our findings seem to support the idea that externalizing tendencies represent stable traits, an idea that does have considerable support in the literature also.
There were developmental changes in the frontal amygdala brain circuitry. What did you find in this respect, and what does it mean?
Yeah, so as I mentioned before, the amygdala is a subcortical brain region involved in salience detection and emotion. And compared to the cortex, which continues to mature well into the early 20s, the amygdala is thought to reach a mature state earlier in development. And there are several theories on adolescence which suggest that adolescents act out the way they do because their subcortical emotional regions mature before the higher order cortex does. And the cortex, therefore, is not able to fully regulate these emotional subcortical regions. And our study shows that amygdala orbital frontal cortex functional connectivity, and to a lesser extent, amygdala anterior cingulate cortex functional connectivity, increased with age. And this could mean that as the frontal cortex develops, it becomes better attuned to the amygdala, and as a consequence, becomes better able to regulate the amygdala. And I realize that interpretation seems to counteract our findings of increased functional connectivity in high externalizing individuals. And the increased functional connectivity between prefrontal regions and the amygdala that we observe in the context of higher externalizing could mean that the prefrontal cortex is working more strongly to successfully regulate behavior in those individuals. And of course, because the prefrontal cortex continues to develop through adolescence, connectivity between the prefrontal cortex and the amygdala becomes stronger over time in both low externalizing as well as in high externalizing individuals, leading in theory to better emotion regulation. And I think it's important to emphasize that our study did not include large numbers of individuals with extreme levels of externalizing tendencies. Uh-huh. So it may be that people with very high levels of externalizing behavior, that the integrity of this circuit would break down as behavior regulation fails. And therefore, future studies should attempt to replicate these findings in a group of high externalizers, which would help to expand upon these interpretations.
That'd be really interesting. Sorry, your findings provide insight into the neural underpinning of externalizing behaviors. How might that be translated into clinical practice? So, for example, could it lead to better targeted interventions?
I think for now, it's too early to expect direct translations of most neuroimaging research in non-clinical samples to the clinical practice. I also want to be very careful not to overstate the clinical reach of these findings, given that our sample was a largely healthy sample. But I do think that studies like ours help solve a piece of the puzzle of understanding the neural circuits that mediate behavioral regulation. I think what our results suggest is that even in the absence of stimulation, individuals who show relatively high levels of externalizing behavior show a different pattern of activation within circuitry relevant for emotional and behavioral regulation. And given this difference at rest, our study could suggest that intervention efforts could focus not only on things like stimulus processing, but also on the individual state when they're not stimulated. However, our results provide no information on how to shape such an intervention or on the effectiveness of such interventions. And again, our study was designed to capture normative behavioral development. And I think it would be useful to determine the extent to which the patterns that we observed here in a largely healthy sample generalize to a clinical population, and also to examine to what extent these structures are susceptible to intervention before making any strong suggestion with regards to clinical intervention. So for now, I think it's too early to translate our findings to clinical practice.
Mm-hmm. You may not be able to answer this next question then in relation to what you've just said, but I wondered if there are any implications of your findings.
I think there are not so much for the neuroimaging findings, but our findings do suggest that externalizing tendencies are relatively stable over time. And I think that part of our findings suggests that identification of individuals at risk can occur early in childhood, and interventions at the behavioral level should perhaps begin early in life, perhaps during the childhood period. But whether such interventions would change the course of neurodevelopment, of course, is an open question.
Sandra, is there anything else you want to highlight from this research?
To summarize, we found that higher levels of externalizing behavior were associated with increased amygdala anterior cingulate cortex functional connectivity and amygdala orbital frontal cortex functional connectivity. And in longitudinal studies, such effects can be explained by differences between individuals as well as differences within individuals over time. And our follow-up analyses revealed that for both amygdala anterior cingulate cortex functional connectivity and amygdala orbital frontal cortex functional connectivity, the effects we're finding could be explained by differences in externalizing behavior between individuals. But only for orbital frontal cortex functional connectivity, the association with externalizing behavior could be explained by within-person fluctuations in externalizing behavior over time. And this means that only amygdala orbital frontal cortex functional connectivity seems to change when the externalizing behavior of the individual changes. And this difference in effect could be explained in different ways. For example, the between person effect of amygdala anterior cingulate cortex functional connectivity could be the result of characteristics that are related to externalizing behavior, but are not the effect of externalizing behavior itself. And therefore, subtle within-person changes in externalizing behavior do not associate with changes in functional connectivity. Another explanation is that amygdala orbital frontal cortex functional connectivity is more sensitive to subtle changes in externalizing behavior than amygdala anterior cingulate cortex functional connectivity is. And if this latter interpretation is the case, perhaps amygdala orbital frontal cortex functional connectivity is more receptive to interventions than amygdala anterior cingulate cortex functional connectivity is.
Are you planning some follow-up research that you can reveal to us?
Yeah, so as a researcher in child and family studies, I'm convinced that externalizing behavior problems do not typically occur in isolation. The family environment is such an important predictor of adolescent and young adult mental health, and therefore I'm working on a project that looks into types and timing of stress exposure within the family and its effects on neural underpinnings of externalizing behaviors. The project is still very much in the early phase, so I can't provide any results as of yet, but I'm very excited to embark on this project and learn more about what experiences may amplify the progression of externalizing or antisocial behaviors.
And any other research projects? Is there anything else in the pipeline that you'd like to mention?
Yeah, most of my current projects focus on the early child environment and its relation with neural development. So if you're interested in how parenting or early stress may affect brain development, please keep an eye out for my work.
And finally, Sandra, what is your takeaway message for those listening to our conversation?
My takeaway message for those listening to our conversation is that adolescents and young adults show variations in frontal amygdala functional connectivity at rest as a function of age and as a function of their level of externalizing behavior. And these were independent effects. Our study underscores, I believe, the importance of studying longitudinal samples. Although we did not find different developmental patterns of frontal amygdala functional connectivity, for high externalizers relative to low externalizers, our longitudinal data do show that associations between externalizing behavior and functional connectivity that are found when comparing different individuals may not be found when you compare the same individuals over time. And as our ultimate aim is to better understand factors that contribute to better mental health in children and adolescents, we are looking for markers that are sensitive to such changes over time. And I believe only longitudinal studies will help us find those.
Sandra, thank you ever so much. For more details on Dr. Sandra Thiessen, please visit the ACAM website, www.acam.org, and Twitter at ACAM. ACAM is spelled A-C-A-M-H. And don't forget to follow us on iTunes or your preferred streaming platform. Let us know if you enjoyed the podcast with a rating or review, and do share with friends and colleagues.